Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, it's all about rock and roll radio and Ronnie Radke. Ronnie's here from Fallen in Reverse, making his Talk is Jericho debut. And if you haven't seen the video for the new single, Voices in My Head, you got to check that out on YouTube. Ronnie has a series of fights against himself. Did most of the stunt work himself as well on the video. It's very well done. He talks about that in this upcoming conversation. Ronnie and Falling in Reverse are also wrapping up the Rockzilla tour with Papa Roach and Hollywood Undead. Their last show is tonight, August 31st in Nashville. Then Falling in Reverse is doing a couple festivals this fall. They'll be at Will Rock Fest, September 24th in Illinois. Aftershock in Sacramento on October 7th. Ronnie's talking about touring, fan interactions, and he gets really candid about the 2.5 years he spent in prison. He talks about what landed him there, what it was like to do the time, how hard it was to assimilate himself back into normal society after he got released. He shares thoughts about his Escape the Fate bandmates abandoning him while he was in prison. He explains how he was able to put Falling in Reverse together behind bars and write the songs that became their first album when he was released. You hear how he's eventually able to make amends with Escape the Fate and what his hard-fought success with Falling in Reverse means to him. Great musical discussion with Ronnie Radke. Before we get to it, have you booked your cabin for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, Four Leaf Clover? Still cabins left at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. You can come now, vaccinated, unvaccinated. The rules have changed. We welcome everybody. And we set sail February 2nd. We're going to our own private island for the first time ever, Grand Cayman Key. The talent lineup is stocked as well. AEW will be on board. We got comedy, live music, paranormal experiences with Dave Schrader. So much going on. Come enjoy the vacation of a lifetime. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right, let's get to Ronnie Radke and Falling in Reverse right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. We were just saying, I haven't seen Ronnie Radke since probably backstage in Atlanta, maybe 5 years ago or so.
Yeah.
You guys were touring with Motionless and White, I think it was.
Yeah.
A lot has happened in that time frame, but it's cool to me because you guys got lots of cool stuff going on, including a really big tour.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's been crazy. Yeah. I can't believe that it's happening like this. It's insane. Tickets are crazy and all that stuff. So the excitement is unreal.
It's a great bill. It's Papa Roach. It's Falling in Reverse. It's Bad Wolves, Hollywood Undead. I mean, that's kind of the secret right now, is doing the big package tours to get kind of the most for your buck, right? The biggest bang?
Yeah, for sure.
Is this the biggest tour that you guys have done?
Yeah, it's the tour's been absolutely insane. I mean, it's been 7,000-8,000 tickets, arenas. The merch is insane. The merch signifies how well the band is doing. And I could tell you that I'm like, oh, okay, so we're supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little nervous because we're going to all these Midwest places where Papa Roach thrives, but we've never really played these places. And I was just like, well, this is probably just going to be, you know, Papa Roach's show. A little nervous. And then we go on stage and I'm like, oh wait, no, this is crazy. Oh my God. Mm. It's very, very sick. It's very cool. It's like, you know, dream. Any musician that starts a band dreams to walk onto an arena floor and the whole crowd is there to see you. That's just a dream that any musician will ever want, you know what I mean? So
totally
living that dream for sure. So it's crazy.
Well, especially like you said, because it's like you see the tour poster and it's Papa Roach and Fall in Reverse. It's like the two kind of co-headlining, at least the spots are the same. So I'm sure it's a little, like you said, a little nervous at first, like,
yeah,
are they gonna come see us too, or that sort of a thing, right?
Oh yeah. At first, the first couple of days, I was like, man, this is crazy. And then I was like, nah, this is right where we're supposed to be. I don't know if you know Papa Roach, but they're so cool about everything. And that really helps a lot because they've been around, you know.
Sure.
It helps a lot. There's no real ego. It's just more confidence and talent. You know what I mean? So
that really makes such a difference too. Like, we've been on tours before with, you know, a headlining band where they're kind of, you know, dickish, so to speak. And it's like, what? Why are we doing this? Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like when you get older as a musician, as a successful musician, all the successful musicians that are older, they're all so nice, usually. And I'm not going to name some mean ones, but usually all the older ones, like Corey Taylor I've met.
Yes.
Or I know him, you know, personally. He's so nice. It's just like you reach a certain level and you just it's hard to explain, I guess. It's just the ego, I guess. You know, all the older musicians that have been around the block are just a lot cooler.
I think it's like that for almost anybody in show business. Like, the bigger the star, for the most part, the cooler they are.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you go on tour with Metallica, or like with us, we did Kiss, or even we played a couple shows with Iron Maiden. Top of the line. It's like everybody's cool. Anything you need, you know, beer in the dressing room signed from Iron Maiden. And like, that's just, I think, because they know their place. They know they're freaking Iron Maiden and Metallica and Kiss. There's nobody going to take our spot, right? Maybe some of the middle guys feel a little bit differently than that.
Exactly. As I've gotten older, you know, and I've been doing this for a really long time, I've noticed myself kind of being a little more grateful when I'm on stage. I don't have much to prove when it comes to being aggressive, or I don't know. It's different for sure. I understand why when you get older and you're doing well, you just kind of take it all in, and you, because it could be much worse.
Mm-hmm.
You could be like 45 years old, 50 years old, playing at a dive bar, and there's like, you do like $40 in merch, you know?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So there's a lot to be grateful for sure.
You appreciate it the older you get too, just how rare it is to get to this spot. I think when you're younger, you just think, well, of course I'm headlining an arena. Why wouldn't I be?
Yeah.
And then you, like David Lee Roth said once, here today, gone later today. It can be gone that quickly, right?
Very true. Yeah. I'm just glad that I did well early on. I'm glad I didn't do this well right now when I was like 24, because I don't think I would have appreciated it as much as I do right now, for sure.
Right.
Like 1,000 caps, 2,000 was super exciting, you know, to do like 8,000. And it's like a hockey arena right now. For me personally, I just look out there and I really appreciate it instead of just letting it go by and getting hammered and like forgetting about it kind of thing. So
it's interesting because I remember even years ago, my niece was obsessed with Ronnie Radke. Oh my gosh, it was probably maybe 10 years ago. You've always had a great relationship with the fans right out of the gate. I mean, even back with Escape the Fate, and now obviously with Falling in Reverse. What is your relationship with the fans, and why has there always been such a great connection for you?
I don't know about a great connection. I feel like that's cool that she was like that. Hopefully she's still like that. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't always have a great connection. I was a dickhead, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Not a dickhead, but I would just be more honest. You know, people filming me when I'm eating, I'll be really rude to them. And I just, some things I just cannot stand, you know. And I feel like you're human and you're going through it, you know, people should understand that. But, you know, I've been called an asshole, and yeah, I wrote a song about it actually. But, I just kind of try to be as honest as I can with the fans and with myself. I just don't like I see a lot of musicians on Twitter, and I'm like, that's not who you are, dude. That's not who you are behind, you know, like this very diplomatic, and, you know, I'm just like, that kind of crap is so fake to me. And I just try to be very candid with the fans and honest, you know. Sometimes it comes across as mean. Most people appreciate it, I think, but yeah, I'm not always perfect to the fans, but I don't know why they like me. I literally don't know. I don't understand. For real. I said it on stage so many times, like, why do you like me? I don't understand. So,
and now everybody has a phone, right? So like you said, people are filming. I get it all the time where someone's, it's like, dude, if you want to take a picture, just ask. The filming when I'm just standing in an airport or standing at a restaurant, it really does kind of like, I can see you. You're not a spy. At least try and hide it a little bit or something. But it's just like,
I hate when they hide it. I just don't like it, man. I think it's so rude. Just come up to me and be brave and get your answer. Don't be rude, man. That's so to me. I'm not an animal in a cage, or just don't have the balls to come up to me. I understand, but if you don't have the balls, don't, like, you're not like doing this kind of pretending like we can all see you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm sure with you, because you're like literally world renowned and everybody knows who you are. You know what I mean? So you've been doing this for so long. Like me, you could see it before it happens, fan. You're like, hey, fan.
Yeah.
Fan. You're like, oh, they're getting the phone out. They're like, no, they're not. I'm like, yep, they're about to film right now. You already just, you know.
You know it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's rude. And if anybody's out there and they're listening to this, I appreciate just when you just walk up and you say, hey, I really appreciate your music. And if you have the time, I'd love to take a picture. If not, it's cool. That's it.
And 9 times out of 10, you'll do it, right? Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. But you film me eating macaroni salad at a Qdoba.
I got shit all on my face. It's like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Really? At least let me know.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know, it's cool to see, like, one of the things I think has really built the band over the last few years is having that presence on rock radio, which I never realized how important rock radio is in 2020, 21, 22 until we started getting played on rock radio. Did you feel the same? Because you just recently had your first number one just a couple years ago.
Yeah, dude. I'm so appreciative. Man, I always wanted to be a radio rock band, but I didn't have the wherewithal. Like, I didn't have the capacity. I just wanted to be very artistic and do whatever I wanted to do. And then I wrote the song Pop Their Monster. That was not intended for radio. So that's what's so cool about how natural that happened. They played that on radio and that went to number one and then went platinum. And that is not a radio song, but I guess now it is. The format is different. It's changing, but I can't believe that happened. You know, the bridge is like full time and it's like death metal scream.
Right.
I'm like, this ain't going to go on the radio. This is too weird. You know, I even said that to my engineer and we were like, yeah, let's just make it cool then. And it went to number one. But before, I would do songs for the fans and I wasn't thinking about rock radio. Now I'm thinking about both and I'm really appreciative. And I've seen we'd go from 2000 cap rooms to 8000 cap rooms within a matter of 2 or 3 years. I've had 2 number one hit singles and the third one is like top 10 right now. So you've had a couple. I love your song that I don't know if it's new. It's newer, the crazy one.
Oh, sane. Yeah. Thank you.
It's dope.
Well, once again, like you said, we had a couple songs that were hits. We never got to number one yet, because that's another thing people don't realize. To get to the top 20 is hard. To get to the top 10 is very hard. To get anywhere past that, that's when all the real chess games come in, because there is so much that has to go into having a number one song. I don't know if people realize how hard that is to get it. I mean, it is very hard.
Yeah, because then you got like Muse, Red Hot Chili Peppers dropping songs. You got all these bands that immediately go to number one because they've been around for so long and they're so huge. So you got to battle them. It's hard. And the radio people have to like it and have to spin it more times. And yeah, it's just a whole thing for sure.
And then now iHeartRadio, they have to get involved and they won't even look at it until you get into the top 10, which is a whole other thing. Because actually right now your song, Voices in My Head, it's right behind our song, I Still Burn. We're kind of neck and neck and we've been going up the charts together, is always cool to see, you know? Yeah, it's cool to see.
Yeah, I love that, dude.
Are you a numbers type of guy? Do you follow that?
100%.
Yeah.
I'm very competitive in a healthy way.
Yeah.
I love that. People are like, oh, it's not about being competitive. Okay, then why do they make number one, Billboard number ones then?
That's right.
You don't want to be number one? Okay, well then, if you're not competitive, then you shouldn't strive to be number one then. So
right.
I love that. I want to be number one because that's what makes you successful in a sense of gaining more fans and stuff. So yeah, I care all about that stuff. I'm reading all of it, you know.
Do you do the same like at night, every night with the numbers on the shows, like how many tickets were sold and your merch numbers and all that stuff?
Comparing them and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to get too much of that. Yeah.
But that doesn't surprise me, man, because I'm the same way. I find that people kind of that you get the artists. Oh, I just want to play guitar. And that's great. I'm an artist, too. I'm also a businessman. And I like to analyze and kind of see, like, why is this market down? Why is this one up? Mm-hmm. all that stuff counts.
Yeah, it does. I think more when you make songs that are topical. I mean, dude, like your song, that song that I love.
Sane, yeah.
It's so good. That's just it. It's the bottom line. It's good, period. People don't realize if it's just a good song, how far that will take you.
Right.
It's just a good song. There's nothing else to explain about it.
Does it take you a long time to write these songs? You spend a lot of time on every single detail, or they kind of just fall out depending?
No, dude. I rewrite the chorus probably like 5 or 6 times.
Mm.
My trick is I'll write the chorus. I'm like, and then that day I'll be so stoked and convinced. And then I wake up in the morning and play it. And you know how when you listen to music in the morning, it's just a different feeling?
That's right, yeah.
It sounds better in the morning. And then 6 days later, if I wake up and I'm like, this is a hit, then I know. 6 days later, if I wake up, I'm like, I don't know, man. This is, some, I don't know. And that's when I know I got to change it. So
I agree with that. You got to sleep on it. A few years ago, I was... I've worked with Bullet for My Valentine, and Matt called me up and he was like, we're writing a song a day and recording it that night. I think the album is called Temper Temper. And I was like, ah, man, that's ballsy, dude.
Yeah.
You write and record that night and that's it. Like you have to, in my opinion, spend time with it. Like you said, and everything you come up with first is genius.
Right.
And then you come back the next day and it's like, I don't know about that.
Not that good.
Yeah.
Exactly. People don't realize how hard it is to be in the studio. People think you just go in the studio and you make a cool song. No, you got to be really talented, raw, and hardworking to make consecutive, really good songs all the time. That's why I appreciate these bands that put out really good songs all the time. It's not easy to just whip a song together, especially in this climate where everything has to sound really good, mix really good, because there's, you know, everybody's just getting good from their apartments, dude. You know?
Right. Good call, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the videos that you guys have done, because I watched Zombified, and obviously Popular Monster was a great one. And then Voices in My Head, like, they're very, kind of has a little bit of a vibe that Spencer does with Ice Nine Kills. You could tell he's putting a lot of time into creating these little stories, but very high effects and all that sort of stuff. Are you kind of behind the concepts of those?
Yeah, I'm the reason they're there for sure. So from my Escape the Fate to now, I've always had crazy videos where they were just so outrageous. Just this past 6 years, started with a song called Losing My Mind,
mm-hmm.
where I started creating bigger songs and bigger stories. And it was kind of, they linked together.
Mm.
And then eventually we've gotten to this point. Yeah, where it's just outrageous. You know, Zombified is insane. I can't believe they're listening to me. I'm like, all right, well, I want a bunch of zombies in a big city. You know, that's expensive.
Right.
Then I want UFOs to come. Imagine me explaining this to them. They're like, what? And then they suck up all the zombies. And then we think everything's cool. And then we jump into a monster's mouth. And they're all just like, okay. You know, so it turned out very good.
But so how are you able to do those? Because obviously there's a lot of effects in that and a lot of CGI and all that sort of a thing.
It's cost money.
Yeah, right.
Lots of it. People would like to save that money to live and stuff. And I would give all that money. I'd give my car away for that video. That video, cars come and go. That video is going to be forever. So it's way more important. It's an investment in my eyes. So.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I've always been a proponent of, you got to spend money to make money.
Yeah.
Especially if you want to go to the top, like, you got to spend that money. I mean, I look at Kiss, how much they're spending even to this day with costumes and production and everything like that. I mean, it really does make a difference. People look at that.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you do the same thing when you do your shows? Do you have a lot of production?
A lot of lights. I'm obsessed with lasers, lights, and video back walls.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not really like the guy in a costume come out or none of that.
Yeah, right.
Some people like that. It's interesting, but I'm more of like the digital cyberpunk, like a EDM festival. I like the electronic side of it, like to make it look futuristic mostly. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. That makes sense though.
Yeah.
Do you spend a lot of time like designing the actual lights, or do you work with designers, or how do you figure it out?
I'm like, I want the lasers, and then I leave it to the professionals on that side. I'm not very hands-on with the...
Mm-hmm.
I want, you know, on the creative side, and then they'll just make it, and they'll, I'll get the approval, they'll get the approval from me, and then it looks insane, you know. So,
and that's like even like with the Voices in My Head video, where you're basically fighting yourself, all different versions of yourself. That was a great idea.
That was hard work, for sure.
In what way?
Me doing the stunts. There's two parts where I'm not doing the stunts, but that's me doing all the fighting and all the like flying in the air and stuff on the road. Had the bruises, and I was fasting, so I looked really good. So I was fasting on top of that. You know how camera adds 10 pounds. So I had to fast, and I had to do like 13-hour days, 3 days for 3 days.
Right.
Filming just a music video, a 3-minute and 10-second music video. It was hard. Burn all those calories and fight. And it was crazy, for sure.
But you're fighting yourself.
Yeah. A bunch of me's like,
so it was like a kind of a stunt double type of a thing that you would just kind of fill in the blanks later.
Yeah. The stunt team was so cool, man. They taught me a bunch of stuff. They told me, they're like, you picked it up so well. And usually we'd be doing more stunts for you. And it's surprising that you were able to do it. I was like, it's my first time ever doing anything like this. So.
Well, and like, once again, you're in great shape, which is, you know, it's very important as well as a lead singer to be in that shape. But you got to spend a lot of time training too. Does that help you kill some time on the road?
I work out every day with one day off, but I'm just grateful my band does too. If it was just me, it'd be a little bit harder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
On tour, I just don't drink. I think drinking, you know, I stopped drinking a long time ago. I used to drink and trash stuff and be fun, and you know, it's a little bit more boring. But drinking, I would not work out.
Right.
When you're 38 or like when you get past a certain age, the hangovers are like 3 days long. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't do it. So that's helped. So being sober is definitely helping me go to the gym.
What was the catalyst for you to stop drinking?
The how bad you feel.
Yeah.
I'm like, I cannot. This is outrageous. You know, I just wake up and feel awful, like anxiety, sometimes get panic attacks, and it was just started not being worth it to me. You know, it was fun, but nah.
It's hard enough to be on the road. And also too, it's hard when you're a singer. That's the worst part, because if you're a guitar player, you know, and you go get f***ed up and stay up all night, I mean, you can kind of hide behind your guitar.
Uh-huh.
When you're a singer, you know, and you go out and you're,
yeah,
you know, it is talking loudly over the music and all that other stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It f***s you up, man.
It does. Yeah, you got to take care of yourself for sure. When you're 25, that's cool. You do whatever you want. But when you're like headed to 40 and you're like singing like screaming death metal notes and singing and rapping, and you have to run around, like not just stand still. Yeah, you gotta figure it out. So.
Got a cool project coming out. I'm assuming it's your first book. It's an autobiography.
Yeah, it's got some weird stuff in it.
Well, let's talk about that, because I've written a few books. It's not the easiest thing to do, but it's also a pretty cathartic experience.
Yeah, the book's called I Can Explain. I named it that because it's really funny to me, because I've gotten in so much trouble and have a bad reputation, but people love me, but I get a lot of crap online and stuff like that. So it was a perfect I Can Explain kind of, it's a perfect name for me. And it's just explains you know, me going to prison and me getting out, going to prison addicted to drugs, getting sober, dealing with post-traumatic stress from prison, stuff like that. Early life, you know.
That's interesting, man. I mean, that's because you've had quite the story, and you've told it a million times. But when you mentioned being in prison, addicted to drugs while you're actually in jail.
Yeah. County jail. You don't go straight to prison, but right. You go to county jail and they send you to prison. Yeah. I went to county jail addicted to opiates. So opiates are really fun, but they are not fun if you don't have them. You feel really bad. You feel awful. And when I say really fun, I'm not glorifying them. So if anybody's watching having a hard time, that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
They're fun while they lasted. You know, they're not worth it. They'll kill you, you know. But, yeah, they're not fun withdrawing in jail, because you don't get all the benefits of withdrawing in your bed. It was awful. Just put it like that.
Did you have to go get, like, treatment to try and kick it? Or did it take a long time to get over that?
about 2 weeks, but they don't care about you. They don't care. You tell them you're withdrawing and they give you like this, I don't even know what it was. It just makes you sleep, but it did not help. Right when I was feeling well enough to like not like lay down, I went to court in jail and they're like, you're going to prison.
Oh my gosh.
I feel good enough to this and now I'm going to prison. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I took a razor and I shaved. I had long hair. I shaved my hair because I thought, you know, get raped and, you know, and stuff like that, like the movies. But
right.
That's not what happens. It's not like that.
Mm.
It's completely not like that. Maybe like 1992 or something, right. But it wasn't like that. So I went into a prison with the worst haircut you've ever seen. Really funny.
Well, dude, once again, you did, I think, 2.5 years. I did 72 hours a couple of years ago. Just like you said, you could be a hot shot outside. You go in, I don't care if it's for an hour or 10 years, instantly. That is the reality check of all reality checks ever.
Yeah.
How was that for you to kind of click your mind into that? Because like you said, dude, that's 2.5 years and you're in a very successful band, Escape the Fate at the time.
It destroyed me. You know, it destroyed anybody that
sure.
Band and your band's going up and then you get everything taken away and it's all your fault. It's my fault.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, I could never do that. I would kill myself. People say that all the time. I'll never go to prison. Like, no, you go and you'll survive. The human brain is crazy what it endures. You go to jail the first 72 hours, it's awful. By the way, county jail is way worse than prison.
Yeah.
It's way worse. Like the food.
Yeah, that's where I was, county jail, right? That's where you go first, right?
Way worse.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Prison's more dangerous, you know, in a sense of like people don't care. They have life. They'll kill you. You know what I mean? It's
right.
More, but county jail is disgustingly dirty.
Yeah.
And the food, I mean, it's worse.
Did you ever get the bologna sandwich in a plastic bag with a cookie on top that tastes like bologna sandwich?
Oh, yeah.
That's a connection we'll always have. You want a bologna sandwich cookie? Anyone?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's great.
I didn't know that county was worse than actual prison. I wasn't aware of that.
County's where people stay for a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's worse. And prison is where they live. So the food's a little bit better. The food's better, period. The feeling's different. It's way more dangerous and it's traumatizing. Post-traumatic stress. Yeah, I got, you know, it's like a soldier going to war and coming home.
Hmm.
The same part of the brain. Because you're in like a war zone. The biggest, scariest guys in there are terrified. They're terrified. Everybody's scared in there. Because, you know, you're looking around. You don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Makes you kind of paranoid, for reals.
When you said you had PTSD, is that just because of that feeling of always having to watch your back and all that sort of thing? Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in there. I was in a prison riot. I wasn't in it, but I was in the middle of it. It was the Serranos versus the Blacks, and the Whites had to lay down and couldn't be involved. But there was like a guard. He had a shotgun from his thing, and he would shoot. Mm. It's called bird shots. It had salt in it, so it wasn't lethal. And that was loud. And there's just a lot of moments that are very warlike and scary. So then you go from that and then they're like, all right, good luck. And then you go outside and everything's so big. You're so used to like being confined and small and the same colors.
Mm-hmm.
And then they let on everything's super colorful. Everything's far away. It seems everything's like super far away. You know, you have to make decisions. And there you don't make, they make the decisions for you.
Hmm.
You have like a couple decisions you can make and everything else is they tell you when to eat. They tell you what you're going to eat. They tell you when you're, you know, and then now all of a sudden you have to make all these decisions after being institutionalized for years. So it was stressful. It's very traumatic. I went to therapy for 2 times a week for 2 years.
I can see that. I can totally see that. It's like it's not the same, but Shawshank Redemption, where the dude gets out and he wants to get back in because his whole life has been, like you said, living within this system. And now you're on your own, right?
Yeah, I was in there for 2.5 years. Thankfully, it wasn't 10.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you reach a certain point after you've been in there so long that you want to go back. I never wanted to go back.
Yeah.
I remember walking into a Subway for the first time.
Yeah.
And they were like, what do you want? And I just had a complete meltdown.
Oh, wow.
there was just so many things. I was like, I don't know. And I just had to start trembling and I had to leave and stuff. My friends had to order for me. It was wild.
That makes sense though, man. It's admirable you went through that, but it's also admirable to me that you were able to start falling in reverse while you were in prison. How the hell did you do that?
Yeah. So I would, I'd play. That's how I made a lot of my songs. All the songs, couldn't sing really loud. I didn't want to annoy people. So I had to kind of whisper it. So I had to get my voice back when I got out.
Hmm.
I was like doing this instead of belting.
Right, right.
So I had to relearn all that. That didn't take too long. I wrote all the songs like that, singing the guitar parts and stuff. It was, I had all the time in the world, so I just write the lyrics. Thankfully, I know how to write songs and I would keep them in my head. Mm. I'm so thankful for that because a lot of people, they don't have that capacity, So I was very grateful for that.
Were you able to remember? Because you couldn't record on anything, right?
Oh, I mean, I was doing it every day over and over.
Gotcha.
You do that every day for 2.5 years, you're going to remember,
So did you put together a lineup as well? Or did you just have this idea of here's the songs and I'll find guys to play with?
There's someone that was helping me that was out there, but he started getting a lot of attention. And I feel like that went to his head. So he didn't understand how to take that,
mm-hmm.
but he started just letting people join the band. I was like in prison.
Right.
It was weird, but yeah, there was one guy named Jackie. He's very good at solos and stuff. And it kind of formulated in like that. And I got out. And I was so, oh my God, man, I couldn't go in public. Must have been a nightmare being in band with me. I couldn't do anything.
Because of your mental state.
Yeah, and I was aggressive too.
Hmm.
I couldn't help it. I was super aggressive. Just hindsight is 20/20. I'll just tell you that for sure.
Did you know, like you said, you're in for 2.5 years. Did you know I'm getting out on, May 12th? Or was it kind of like you had to go for probation or how did that work?
I went for probation. They didn't let me out on probation. Thankfully, I'm glad they didn't.
Gotcha.
Because they wouldn't let me leave.
Mm-hmm.
And just all my time. I was supposed to get on my birthday. And they're so disgustingly mean in there that my release date was my birthday. They let me out the next day.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember when once again, I'm not comparing because this is just my own little experience. I had a piece of paper and I was writing by the hour, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And when I got to that 72nd hour, I was like, if I would have had to stay for another hour, I would have lost my fucking mind because I was counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 59, 60, it's 72 hours. Can I get out now? Can I get out now? I was just so that extra day must have felt like an eternity for you.
It was wild. Couldn't sleep. You know that feeling, because they escort, they're releasing you.
Yeah.
You get dopamine. It's indescribable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about. They roll it up and they open the loud door. And they're like, come on. You're like, what do you mean? Come on. You're letting me go. And they're like, yeah.
Right.
The whole thing floods your body. And then right before you get released, they probably put you in this room. And then there's the door that opens. Outside, and then the other door closes,
mm-hmm.
and then that door opens, and it's outside. You walk out, and you're like, for you, since you weren't in there and you weren't traumatized, in a sense, you're probably like,
oh. Yeah, I'm going to Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, it's probably incredible. I already know.
Yeah,
I went to jail and they let me out in 24 hours, 36 hours. I've done that too. I know that.
Yeah,
incredible getting out.
So when you got out just now, you're talking about you've got some songs that you've written in your head and on the desk.
Yeah.
Was it hard to get a new record deal? Were you kind of untouchable or were they waiting for Ronnie Radke to get out?
They're waiting.
Yeah.
They were scared. They waited a month or two to see if I was going to go straight to drugs. And I didn't.
Right.
Way too traumatized to do drugs. Yeah. Right. No way.
Yeah.
Drink beer. Because I thought it would help my anxiety. It helped, but it just made it worse every morning,
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was the same label that I went in with. We just kind of immediately went. I went to Florida and made my first album. And it was a huge album too. Drugging Me Is You. It was very big.
It was big, yeah.
Yeah. For the time, it did well. Yeah.
You made it with Elvis too, right? With Mike Baskett. Yeah.
Yeah.
How was he working with knowing what you had just gone through? Was he a guy that you had known before?
I've known, he's the reason I got signed, because he did my first demo and he did my Escape the Fate album too.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
My demo sounded so good back then. So the label's like, who the hell did this? This sounds, all the other demos sound like crap and all the bands. And this one sounded like high produced.
Mm-hmm.
The label was instantly interested. So I knew him in Vegas. We did a lot of, never mind. Actually, we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun for sure. But that was a long time ago. But yeah, he understood. It was still hard. I was so messed up. I was so messed up getting out of prison and making an album. You know, I had to stay in a little hotel. I was comfortable inside a hotel. I didn't want to leave.
Because it was a smaller room, maybe? You had smaller...
I just had so much anxiety, dude, around people. People made me nervous.
Hmm.
They're like, their facial expressions would make me nervous. I'm completely not like that anymore. Like, I could be in large groups. I can have conversations with anybody now, but not then. I had full meltdowns. I couldn't be with more than one person at a time. If there's two people in the room, it made me feel very crazy.
Really? Wow. Yeah.
Social anxiety. Insane, man.
Which is interesting, because you're the front man of a rock and roll band, which means when you're on stage, you got to be the party host and the focus of everyone's attention.
Yeah, that was fine. Bizarre, because it was loud. I was protected by how loud it was.
Hmm.
It was usually when it got really quiet, because in prison, if it got really quiet, something really bad was going to happen.
Mm.
You could tell, because it would get really quiet and I'd be like, is it me? Uh-oh. I'd be like, hey, what's happening right now? Like, oh, so-and-so is going to, I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like, are you telling me the truth right now?
Yeah.
For reals, you don't know. Is someone going to do something?
Right.
When it gets really quiet in there, the energy changes. So I think I relate that with when I got out, if it got really quiet, if the room got really quiet, I'm looking around, especially when people know I went to prison and they just meet me, They're not very loud or like themselves. They're kind of shy or they get quiet and they don't realize that was bad. So it sucked for sure.
Did you have a lot of fan support when you were in jail? Like, do they send you letters, or did you have an email that you could access or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I got thousands of letters for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The cops, the COs hated that, dude, because they have to check every letter.
Oh.
I know I got probably more than that. They probably threw away a lot of letters. I'd get some from Czech Republic, Russia, Germany, every day, every single day. So, and they have to read it too.
Oh, wow.
I don't think they read most of them.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's a security risk.
Yeah.
You don't know what they're sending, what they're saying. So technically they're supposed to read all of the letters before they give you them.
They got to check to make sure someone's not trying to send you a file or something like that.
Yeah.
How important were those letters to you at that time?
That was one of the most important things.
Hmm.
Yeah. One of the most important things in the entire world, because that's all I had, it seemed. I mean, I had a TV. I could watch TV. And I had friends I could call, but the letters were just the last sign of hope for having any type of career and identity in music, that identity that I identified in music for sure. So all the people that sent me that really helped me a lot mentally for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I can see that.
Yeah.
How long did it take for you to kind of, forgive your other band for letting you go or firing you, whatever it was when you were gone? Did it take, have you made amends with them now?
Oh, I love them. I do.
Okay. That's great. Yeah.
They're like brothers, because we were in high school together.
Yeah.
I've known them since we were like 15, 16. But the moment I forgave them was when I walked on stage knowing they just played before me.
Oh.
For reals, never forget it. I walked on stage and I knew, I was like, yep, it's fine now.
Was it a festival, or were you guys touring together, or what?
They were opening for me on a tour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That must have been huge to put that together.
Yeah. It took a lot of their egos to be set aside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, you know, I see them on festivals and we're at the top on the top line, which is hard to do, man. It takes years to get to the very top.
You have, you're right.
Kiss or Ghost. I'm like, does my name even deserve to be up here? It feels so crazy. I'm like, that name looks weird up there, but and I'm not dissing them. I'm just being passionate. They're really small and they're at the bottom. And I'm like, God, good Lord, that could have been me, you know?
Right.
So it is what it is, man. That's how the world works sometimes. And it makes me grateful. I'm just very grateful. Very grateful for being myself, staying true to myself, and having the capacity to write songs that people like.
Yeah, and I kind of disagree with you. I once again, I'm not just saying this because you're here, but like I said, I go back to my niece when she was younger. She was all about Ronnie Radke. If you were still in Escape the Fate, or whether you're in, you know, Joe Puke and the Chunky Bits, I think you would have gotten to the next level just because it's you. You have that connection, man. It is what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, I think part of it is always never being too confident or thinking you have all in the bag.
Yeah.
I have people always running out into the crowd and making sure there's a lot of people there still.
How do you mean?
I'm just worried that people aren't going to show up still.
Oh, I see.
I'm like, bro, are there a lot of people? I'm constantly asking.
You mean before you hit the stage? Dude, I'm the same way. I get my sound guy every night. Can you take a picture from the front of house and let me see what it looks like? I got to know.
Yeah, because if you're too confident, it's going to hurt a lot worse.
Yeah.
When there's people don't show up or something. So, and my crew will be like, bro, they're here to see you, dude. And I'm like, yeah but is there a lot? Like, what does it look like? Yeah. Like, yes, look at it, man. What are you talking about? They all, you know, every day, every show, every single show. It's like a Groundhog Day, you know?
I'm the same way though. Like, obviously our band is a fraction of as big as yours, but it's like, if I'm always nervous, like if no one shows up, that's on me. Like, it's my fault.
And it hurts.
It hurts.
It hurts. And you know, you have to get on stage and weather the storm. Like if it's a 1,000 cap room and there's only 200 people in there. I mean, I guess that's cool. You know, people are like, that's cool. It's cool. You know, you're not for you. If you're standing on stage, you're just like,
yeah.
And it doesn't bother you.
No. And you know, you still got to perform and entertain the people that show up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a lot easier to play a sold out gig than it is to play a 20 or 30% full one. That's for sure.
For sure.
How was it for you during the lockdown? Like, I mean, obviously for all of us, it sucked, but did that affect you, or did you use it to write new music, or what did you do with it?
I wrote Popular Monster in the lockdown.
Oh, there you go.
And I exploded on Twitch. On Twitch, I was the number two most subscribed channel in the world.
Oh, wow.
Number one had 60,000 subscribers, and I was number two. I had 40,000. And that was subscriptions are $5 a piece, and that's monthly.
Jeez Louise, man.
Yeah.
How about that?
It was insane. It was insane. And I just remember, and I was a musician. I was the only musician ever to do that. And I was proud of that because, like, we were in a pandemic, man. So I was just very proud of being the number two most subscribed channel because all these gamers and stuff like that. But it was really crazy. And there was a lot of people that picked it up, and it was on news sites. And I think with that and the mix of Popular Monster, it just really helped my image and career.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of bands kind of tanked during the pandemic. And that's another reason why I'm grateful, because I got bigger than I ever got. Maybe because of the pandemic, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You had to take advantage of it. You know what I mean? That's what I did. Yeah. Rather than making excuses, I just thought of try to do new things to stay creative and stay, you know, entertaining people, right?
Yeah, it worked. I thrived in the pandemic. When people ask me, I 100% thrived.
What did you do on Twitch? Did you play video games, or what did you do?
I did some insane stuff, dude. I made my whole house a green room or green screen.
Yeah.
And I made like, there was like scenes where I would switch. There was like 8 monitors. I was like Doc from Back to the Future. Like, oh man, like I became so obsessed with streaming because there was nothing to do. I was like, well, I can probably make a scene and make it look like this. And it was just me standing in all these different video game worlds, I guess. It was crazy. It helped me a lot because a lot of the fans came over and they would just watch me every day and they said, you helped me get through the pandemic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like Mario World and it was, you know, I'm just like, doing all these weird things. So,
because most people just go on Twitch and play video games, right?
Yeah, I would play video games after I did that.
But you were the actual video game.
Yeah. I was like 40,000 subs a month, man, at $5 per month. That's not bad, dude, for being a pandemic.
For being stuck at home, it's not bad at all, man.
No, it's not.
As we start to wind down, man, what have been some of your favorite tours that you've done with Falling in Reverse? Some of the bands that you've toured with?
Papa Roach, this tour we're doing right now, is by far my top favorite because they're so nice and so sweet. Hollywood Undead and Bad Wolves are all, there's no bullshit. It's just cool.
Right.
And then I would say, man, there's so many favorite bands I've toured with. Holy hell.
Any big ones that you grew up kind of admiring?
No, we've always headlined and I've always wanted to open for big bands. I'm trying to remember. It's going to come to me after we hang up.
Who was it that you liked when you were, that if you were opening for somebody, who would you like?
My Chemical Romance.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
That was one of my favorites. I mean, I played shows with Under Oath, this hardcore band. Like,
of course, yeah.
Metallica. What am I saying, dude? We played this festival just recently with Metallica. That was it. Rockville, I think it's.
Yeah, welcome to Rockville in Jacksonville, right? Daytona, wherever. Daytona.
Yeah, absolutely insane, dude. We went on stage, got off stage, Mudvayne went on stage, and then Metallica. And that was it. That was the end of the thing. So we got to be on that same stage. So it was ridiculous. I mean, it's Metallica.
Right.
It's so awesome, man.
No, man, that's cool to see. I was going to ask you before, too. You mentioned a couple of times about people bagging on you in social media and that sort of a thing. I noticed that you recently took a break from all that. Is that important to do that? Would you suggest to people to do that once in a while?
I think they should do that all the time. The internet ruined the world, I think. It did a lot of good things for me, and I'm grateful for that. But I think too much of a good thing is a bad thing. I feel like it's ruined people's perspectives, especially when you're young and impressionable. Mm-hmm. Thinking you can get away with saying whatever you want growing up like that is not good. I'm glad that I went outside, rode my bike, and I got hurt and got fist fights with the neighborhood kids. And, you know, I was rugged and I was a little boy and I did things outside. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was got in trouble and did not sat in my room all day and
right.
Mean to celebrities. Oh my God. It's ridiculous. I don't understand that. But I've gained thicker skin for being on the internet for so long, absorbing the hate comments they don't affect me anymore. Mm-hmm. But I took a break because the band got bigger and I have a big mouth and I just literally get in so much trouble, mm-hmm. man, saying I will say stuff that people you're not supposed to say for sure. I won't say it on here and we're gonna keep it cool on here, but you know, I have strong opinions on things. So I'm not political, but I certain things going on right now, I just do not agree with. So yeah, I'm not a very political guy. I'm not red or blue or anything like that, but I just disagree with some things.
Well, it's also hard sometimes too. Like I said, you have to have a thick skin, especially when you're a singer or a wrestler, an actor, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But people are just mean. You really wish I would die? Like, you're really putting that out in you. I wish you would die. Or like, are you, really? Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I hate the most is when somebody does die, and then you got people like, well, you guys are sad that he died?
Yeah.
In 1985, he like
right.
rested for this. It's kind of messed up, guys. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It bothers me. Kobe Bryant died. It's just that's what I mean by the internet ruining people or ruining the world in that sense. It's just you got to learn how to navigate through it. So,
do you ever give advice to people? Like, do people contact you that have been in jail or in jail? Now you're kind of almost a role model for a lot of people, as much as you might not like to admit that, but I can see that happening.
Yeah, there's a lot. I get a lot of messages like, I've been sober for this long. How do you, you know, some musicians too that have been canceled. Mm-hmm. They're like, how did you do it? Like, how do you deal with this? How are you still okay? How are you still not canceled? And I always tell them, did you apologize? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, that's why. Why are you apologizing?
Hmm.
You're going to apologize for the person you were 10 years ago right now to a girl named Susie in Kansas that's 17 years old? Right. Thank you. They can go for themselves. I'm not apologizing. I already did my time. I'm not a bad person. You're not going to make... If I was a bad person, I wouldn't be supported by all these legends that I looked up to. You know, I wouldn't have a band. They would all leave me if I was this kind of person.
Right.
They don't realize that. Like, your favorite band are my friends, dude. You know, do them just spouting off, you know?
Yeah. No, that makes sense, dude. That makes sense. And you're right. You're totally right. And that's why. Yeah. Last few things for you. You got a new EP coming out very quickly. Some new music. Why not a full record?
I just like to really just focus all my energy on one song at a time, because it's done so well for me. Mm-hmm. When bands do full albums, details get lost.
Right.
You have like three good songs, right? And you push those songs, and then you have a rest of the album. Album could be amazing. You're rolling dice, or you could lose the details as you're going along. Mm-hmm. And you put like your filler tracks or your least favorite tracks is like number 8. Mm-hmm. I don't want any of those. I want them all to be like, holy shit, this is good. This is good. This is good. This is good kind of thing. So that's why I'm doing that.
It's kind of the way of the world now. You know, even for us, we put a record out in May, but it already had 2 or 3 singles released prior to that over the previous 2 years even.
Yeah.
So it's more about the single and the song coming out and focusing on just one.
Oh, yeah. That would be my word of advice to any bands, longtime bands or new bands starting out. Like, just put all your energy into each song. Worry about that song and not the album. That's my opinion. That personal opinion.
No, you're not wrong, dude. You're not wrong. What's your favorite song to play live?
Favorite song would be for the crowd reaction. Right now, it's either The Voices in My Head, because they go absolutely insane, Zombified, or Popular Monster. They go so crazy for all those. I have some old songs they go crazy for, but it just feels good because the energy, you know, you release your first album and most bands have to play that single off the first album last for the rest of their career.
Right.
Not me. I have to keep playing my new songs last. That's big, dude.
That's huge.
That's a dream for any band. I tell that. I say that on stage. I'm like, you guys don't realize that I just played my hit single from my first record and I still have 4 more songs to go, and they go crazy. I don't understand what that means to me and all musicians that are in that position. It's incredible.
Dude, it's been great talking to you, man. Awesome. Finally get a chance to connect. And I respect all you've been through and all the work that you've been doing, and congrats on everything.
Thank you so much, man. Appreciate you.
We'll see you down the road somewhere for sure.
Right on, man. I'll see you later.